high tax. Therefore, I think we have to start. We want to welcome the members after your coming from the party meeting that you are with us here. We hope that the party has managed to keep the line. Somewhere to go from in relation to issues that we're dealing with. Also want to welcome the commission in this meeting that talks to us about the compliance by departments with regards to disclosures. Not only departments but also the provinces in relation to disclosures, because the Auditor General's report, when it came, it was not quite pleasing in terms of people who have interests in various companies and so on. And they give this work to their friends, to their colleagues and so on. And we're saying that as the political parties, because here is one point where we agree. Agreeing is with the PA that corruption must be combated. It must be rooted out of our systems. And in that, therefore, it means people who are benefiting must be dealt with. You know, we're passing a law yesterday, before yesterday, on local government, Affairs Amendment Act, where we're saying that councillors, officials, and their families, close families, must not benefit out of the work of council. Because we believe that we even define the close family. People are saying no, it means we are depriving people. But we had examples where you find that a father gives a son work and they see that as normal. In some areas they gave work to children who are at school. They have tenders, they're running tenders. I mean, they make a mockery of democracy, and because these kids that are going to school with this one who is running tenders in school, they say, oh, it means you must be a leader in the country, you must be a man, so that you can benefit, or you must be a Section 57 manager or whatever. Yeah. Now, we're saying that on this issue of corruption, we're saying it must be combated, but of course, you must have then a process of getting disclosures and so on. And those are the areas that we raised, but we said that any other matter that you felt that is important for our attention as the committee, you must raise it, because we feel that we must be able to work together as oversight bodies. Most of the time we find that the enemy becomes tired in terms of us dealing with the work, but we hope that we'll be able to find each other in dealing with the issues. Now I'm saying that was the context within which we requested you to talk to us so that we understand where we are. And we are able to ensure that our country moves forward, because the public service is very critical in building a developmental state. It's a strategic area that we have in that system, because it is a hand, it ensures that everybody is taken care of if we build that structure. The ruling party, you know, that it says this year we are building towards the caring society. Caring society, 2012. Therefore, people who are at the forefront of that caring society are the civil servants, are the public service. It's the public service. Because they are the ones who are at the front. The front line of service delivery. When you go to an office, you must feel good that, hey, I was treated like a king or like a queen by the public service. No, the public service that treats you like a subhuman being. Now, I'm saying then that context, then that when we say that these things, the public service is at the center of building a caring society. But having said that, let me give them this opportunity, maybe introduce the team that we have here. Diagonal opposite me, we have an old gentleman from the Northwest, Mr. and the Honorable Letsogile Mtsweni. Behind him, we have the Honorable Mr. Leroux. His name is Valem Leroux. On the left of Mr. Leroux, we have the mother of this committee who looks after us, Mamunyana. In front of her, we have Put Chris. You know, we call it Put Chris Ntuli. You know, you can see that he's really a brother. My brother, you show by stature, but no, he's really a brother. I can come and put the brother of Put Chris. At the back there, we have Inkosi. He's a long-serving member of this committee, highly experienced, you know, and which we know, KwaZulu, they said, no, this thing of called chief, they want to change the name to indigenize it. Then they, they say, no, Inkosi. But then in the Pedi language, we say Hoshi, Sihofi. Mgwen, who's also chairs a very big committee of the front end of justice. But it's an area where transformation has to happen. That's right. That's right. Where it chairs. That transformation must happen at that level. And, but we hope that we are capable of doing that. Then we have the support staff. In our various offices, let me give it to you, then the commissioner, to take us through on your team. Thank you.
You know, thank you very, very much, Chairperson. I don't know. You probably realize by now that as a public service commission, we value the engagement with the select committee. We've always had very, very good interaction. I mean, we actually miss that interaction. We said it before, that we need to engage with you much more frequently. So we are very pleased to be here today. We are very, very pleased to be here today. And I want to record the apologies of our chairperson, who was not able to travel as frequently as he could in the past. And I have to stand in for him as much as I can because of some of those difficulties. At this point in time, I also need to indicate to the committee that our deputy chair, Mr. John Aronson, has recently been retired because of ill health. So his last day of work was on the 29th of February. So he's no longer going to be with us. So I just need to inform the committee of that. I think the two reports that you've asked for us to present to you on are critical. In fact, within the commission itself, we've elevated those two reports in terms of the concerns through our investigations and under our research. We've elevated it to a very, very high level, and we would like to this committee to give us all the necessary support from an oversight point of view for us to, in fact, get to the kind of compliance that we would want to on these matters. And we agree with the concerns that you raised around the AG's report, and for that reason, financial disclosures become even much more pertinent in the management of conflict of interest as well. And you've also indicated that there are other matters you might want to engage us with and you might to get information on. And for that reason, we've brought our DG with, and I'm going to introduce her now, as well as our DDG. So we've got a very, 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 very senior man, senior. I am Dr. Maharaj, I'm the commissioner. Based in the Western Cape, but you know we function as a single team. We've got Ms. Ramsing, Ed Ramsing, our Director General, and Admiral Simpson, Deputy Director General, and one of our Chief Directors, Balungile Mbandla. And then, of course, I think Nozipewe doesn't need much introduction here. She's been known to Parliament and to honorable members now for a long time. So we're very, very pleased to be here. I'm going to ask, this is Admiral, the DDG will make the first presentation, and then we'll take your guidance as to whether you want to hear both presentations before we go into the discussion, or whether you would want to pause in between, but we'll wait for your call on that.
Thank you, Commissioner. We will then first start to look at the compliance with the financial disclosure framework for senior managers. In conducting this presentation, I will provide a brief background. We look at the actual compliance with the submission of financial disclosure forms, the scrutiny of financial disclosures for potential conflicts of interest, and some of the challenges that we've experienced since the implementation of the financial disclosure framework, as well as some of the recommendations contained in our reports and monitoring mechanisms as far as financial disclosures are concerned. Just in terms of the background, you are well aware that a key mandate of the Public Service Commission is the promotion of professional ethics. And we do this in various forms. I think you are aware that we are responsible, we were responsible for development of a code of conduct, we manage the financial disclosure framework, we are responsible for the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, and we also perform the secretarial function for the National Anti-Corruption Forum. But a key aspect that we need to, that the PSC has prioritized to be addressed in terms of professional ethics is the management of potential conflict of interest that exists between the private interests of senior managers and the public responsibilities. And to address this situation, the PSC has developed the financial disclosure framework for senior managers. The main objective of this framework is to manage potential conflicts of interest by requiring senior managers to disclose their financial interests. From the PSC's perspective, by managing conflicts of interest through the financial disclosure framework, it is ensured that honest public servants remain honest. The financial disclosure framework was introduced in March 2000 for heads of departments and senior managers on salary level 15, and in May 2001 the framework was extended to all managers of the senior management service. The asset register, in terms of which all financial disclosures are filed, is regulated in terms of the public service regulations, and the responsibility of managing the asset register is vested within the PSC. In terms of the public service regulations, all senior managers must submit their financial disclosures to the executing authorities by April of each year. In turn, executing authorities must submit those disclosures to the Public Service Commission by May of each year. Just to give you some of the examples of what the types of interests are that are registrable interests and that must be disclosed by SMS members. This includes, amongst others, shares and other financial interests in private and public companies and other corporate entities recognized by law, directorships and partnerships, sponsorships, gifts and hospitality from a source other than a family member, and ownership and other interests in land and property. I'm not going to run through the whole list of the registrable interests. The PSC is responsible for scrutinizing financial disclosures to identify potential conflicts of interest and advising executing authorities accordingly. The role of the PSC in identifying potential conflicts of interest can only be performed effectively if all disclosure forms are received as prescribed by the regulations. As the PSC, we have monitored the extent of compliance with the financial disclosure framework consistently. We have conducted an investigation into the management of conflicts of interest through the financial disclosure framework, covering the period from 1999-2000 when the FDF was implemented to 2004-05. The report that emanated from this investigation identified potential conflicts of interest through an analysis of a sample of financial disclosures for those financial years, as well as the exception reports of the Auditor General report that you referred to earlier on. The PSC further compiled a fact sheet on compliance with the financial disclosure framework for 2006-07, which was submitted to all executing authorities. This fact sheet highlighted concerns regarding the late submission of financial disclosures. Since the inception of the financial disclosure framework, the rate of compliance by national and provincial departments has not been satisfactory. The fact that not all financial disclosures are received by the PSC impacts negatively on its ability to identify potential conflicts of interest. This presentation reflects on the PSC's findings on the extent of compliance with the financial disclosure framework drawing from its monitoring thereof. Now, as far as the submission of financial disclosure forms is concerned, the PSC is of the view that given this, that this is a regulatory requirement, only 100% rate of compliance will be acceptable. It is therefore disconcerting that throughout the 8 financial years since the establishment of the financial disclosure framework, 100% compliance has not been achieved. For the financial year 1999-2000, 229 SMS members had to declare their financial interest. However, only 142 financial disclosures were received by the CC. Would you recall that I mentioned that in that particular financial year, it was only limited to HODs and SMS members on salary level 15. The level of compliance improved over the next 2 financial years to 66% and 82%. And during the financial years 2002-03 up to 2004-05, the average submission of financial disclosures was 66%, 72% and 77% respectively. Over the last 2 financial years, the 80% compliance rate has been achieved. So I must just qualify that the 80% compliance rate for 2006-2007 figures as of 20 February 2008. It happens that we still receive financial disclosures after the due date for the submission of the financial disclosure, so this figure might still go up. This table provided in your presentation provides an overview at national and provincial level of the extent of compliance over the 8 financial years since the existence of the FDF. As you would note, in most provinces and national departments, there are very few examples of departments that actually achieved 100% compliance. And since the implementation of the financial disclosure framework, the PSC has forwarded numerous reminders to executing authorities, not only requesting that these financial disclosure forms, but also reminding them that senior managers that do not comply with the FDF are actually guilty of misconduct in terms of Chapter 3 of the Public Service Regulations. As you would note from the table that is on your presentation, a number of departments and provinces have consistently performed poorly in complying with the regulatory requirements of submitting financial disclosures. The submission rate in the Eastern and Northern Cape, as well as the Free State, was below 50% in a number of financial years. The Northwest is the only province that has achieved 100% compliance rate over the last 2 financial years. As far as national departments are concerned, the National Department of Health only submitted disclosure forms of their senior managers on 1 occasion since the implementation of the financial disclosure framework, and the Department of Housing only 2. The national departments from which 100% financial disclosure forms were received since the implementation of the FDF are the following: the Independent Complaints Directorate, our own office, the Office of the Public Service Commission, and the Department of Transport. And apart from the last 2 financial years, 100% compliance rate was also achieved by the Government Communication Information System, National Treasury, Safety and Security, South African Management and Development Institute, and Statistics South Africa. As I've indicated, some of these departments may still achieve 100% compliance rate, given that we are still receiving financial disclosures for the current finance, for 2006-07. Whilst it is encouraging that as of 20 February, we already stand with an 80% compliance rate, and this compliance rate might still improve, it's important to also note that in terms of the regulations, departments must actually submit, or executing authorities must actually submit by 31 May of each year. Now, in practice, there are various delays in the submission of financial disclosures to the Public Service Commission, which means that we don't actually receive all the disclosures by 31 May. And the next table gives you an indication of the extent to which departments are able, or executing authorities are able, to actually submit this by the 31st of May. What we have noted is that in many cases, designated officials or SMS members sign their performance, their financial disclosure forms, before the due date of submission to the executing authority, but it is delayed in the office of the executing authority for whatever reason before it comes to the Public Service Commission. In some instances, even the executing authority may have signed form before the due date, but the forms arrive late at the PSC. This does impact somewhat negatively on our ability to perform our functions, as we are not in a position to advise executing authorities timely of potential conflicts of interest. If we can then go to the scrutiny of financial disclosures for potential conflicts of interest. In scrutinizing financial disclosure, the PSC applied three principles to identify potential conflicts of interest. First of all, we look at the relationship or compatibility of the company with which an official is involved in relation to the work that the department is doing. As such, a relationship could lead to potential conflicts of interest. It is also presupposed that if an official is involved in a large number of companies, this official could experience conflicts of interest. And this is based on the fact that in terms of the Public Service Act, every employee shall place the whole of his or her time at the disposal of the state. So we go from the assumption if a person is involved in a myriad of companies, what is the time available then for his or her work in the public service? In some instances, two or more officials from the same department are involved in the same company or companies. This is seen as a potential conflict of interest that such officials could make decisions that favor one or the other. The Public Service Commission applied these three principles in a scrutiny of the sample of a sample of 300 financial disclosures per financial year for the period 2002-2003 up to 2004-2005, as well as the exception reports of the Auditor General that we've referred to. The assessment of the sample of financial disclosures, those 300 disclosures per annum, found that no potential conflicts of interest could be attributed to work outside of the public service, sponsorships, gifts and hospitality, consultancies and entrepreneurships, and land and property. In terms of shares and directorships, however, potential conflicts of interest were identified, as indicated in this table. As you would note, the first or the second column indicates the number of senior managers per financial year who actually declared that they have shares and directorships. Out of those, we've identified cases where those officials might have potential conflicts of interest. And you would know that it's actually quite a high percentage in some of the instances. In the 1990-2000 year, for example, it was 72%, and in 2003-2004, 66 of those that declared that they have shares and directorships could have a potential conflict of interest. What made it difficult in analyzing whether or not a person has a potential conflict of interest is that critical information on job content is not provided in the financial disclosures. And as such, the PSC had to make certain assumptions based on the principles that I discussed earlier on. This may have resulted in more potential conflicts of interest being identified that would have been the case had more information on job content been available to the PSC. The Auditor General provided the PSC with 1,581 exception reports. Now, these exception reports provided an indication of the total number of S&S members who are directors or members in companies and closed corporations. The PSC then went and analyzed the financial disclosures of those relevant senior managers for 2003-2004, which was the period applicable to the Auditor General's report, in order to determine if they indeed had disclosed these directorships or partnerships. In analyzing whether these directorships and partnerships would perhaps result in a potential conflict of interest, we applied the same principles as I referred to earlier on in assessing the financial disclosures. Based on the analysis, it was found that a total of 835 SMS members are involved in companies which could pose a potential conflict of interest to the state as employer. This presents represents 53% of the total number of cases that were identified by the Auditor General. And the next slide, a table is provided, which provides a breakdown per national departments and provinces as far as the potential conflicts of interest are concerned. In a number of cases, the PSC could not come to a conclusion on whether a potential conflict of interest exists. This was due to the fact that not enough information was available on the financial disclosure, as well as the fact that not enough information concerning the company was available from the CIPRO database. CIPRO is the Companies and Intellectual Properties Office database. The national departments and officials identified by the Auditor General had the lowest potential conflict interest as our own office, the Office of the Public Service Commission, with 18%. This is followed by the Department of Home Affairs with 25% and the Department of Foreign Affairs with 41%. SAT SA with 92% and the Department of Communications with 90% and Minerals and Energy with 71% for the departments at national level, which had the highest percentage potential conflicts of interest. After assessing the potential conflicts of interest of designated officials identified by the Auditor General, it was found that those officials who have directorships in private companies and close corporations and whose job functions are closely aligned with financial management, safety and security and education pose the highest potential of conflicts of interest. Based on our monitoring of the financial disclosure framework and through our investigation, etc., we have identified a number of challenges with the management of the financial disclosure framework. For us, the most significant challenge is that financial disclosures are not submitted timely to the Public Service Commission. Disclosures are predominantly received after the cut-off date of May of each year, impacting negatively on our ability to identify conflicts of interest, and as I indicated earlier on, critical information on job content is not provided, making our task more difficult to establish whether a conflict of interest or potential conflict of interest actually exists. Another challenge is that the number of designated officials since the implementation of the financial disclosure framework has consistently increased over the period under review from 229 in 1999-2000 to 6,434 in 2004-2005. The growth rate of SMS members, together with the higher levels of compliance, is creating a challenge for the PSC, and that the PSC must increase its human resource capacity geared towards the financial disclosure framework to fulfill its mandate in terms of assessing and identifying potential conflicts of interest. Emanating from these challenges, and in the report that has been handed out to you, would note that there are a number of recommendations that we've made in trying to improve the implementation of the financial disclosure framework. We propose the following: that heads of departments play a more active role in the management of the financial disclosure and the identification of potential conflicts of interest, that penalties or fines be imposed for non-compliance with the framework, that an electronic financial disclosure framework be introduced, that ethics officers be appointed in all national and provincial departments to facilitate financial disclosures, that compliance with the financial disclosure framework is linked to the performance agreement of designated officials, and that the financial disclosure form be amended to ensure that adequate information is provided for the identification of potential conflicts of interest. In conclusion, Chair, managing the conflicts of interest of public servants effectively is an important stepping stone to achieving high levels of integrity in the public service. Through the management of conflicts of interest, honest public servants are kept honest and the opportunity for corruption to occur is reduced. The PSC intends to sharpen its role in managing conflicts of interest through the financial disclosure framework for senior managers. Thank you.
Do you want to add anything, Mr.
No, not at this point in time. I think I just wanted to get from yourself whether you want us to...
No, we'll pause here. Well, I think colleagues have heard what is happening, and I think you can agree with me that this is the interesting subject that this committee has not engaged itself with. In fact, it's something that I think we must be preoccupied with it. If I had the time was on my side, I would set a program for the whole week. We call all national departments, provincial departments, to come and tell us why they are not the soldier. If you want to remind the code comrade or the minister, Trevor Manuel, he says that our task is to ensure that we sit on government departments to do what is supposed to be done. We don't pass laws or policies for the sake of passing them. It's for them to be used so that they don't get the task to be implemented. Now, I think you hear that the Department of Communications, the potential conflict is 90%. A Department of Minerals and Energy, potential is 71%. The other one is 92%. Potential conflict of interest. 92%. It means great. We should do all of that. Now, clearly, then, you hear what is happening, that also that this form is inadequate. For the people who give you the answer, because you get right answers because you ask right questions. Like so. Now, it means then we must really pay some attention as a public to ensure that things are done. Because I'm telling you, you know, one of the things that one is living without doing was to ensure that we are like scored by this committee. You know, I always wanted that. Where we call, because we are cross-cutting, we call departments on this issue, that issue, and so on. Including this thing of not filling vacancies. It's our responsibility. It's our task. That was what was supposed to account to us. I mean, remember, when you call the police, they tell you stories, they tell you from here to Brooklyn. nothing is happening. Now, you know what? I think we come right now. We must discuss a possibility of being more creative. I mean, we began to have a week dedicated to a committee. Maybe we must look at the possibility of a chairperson leading a committee and maybe dividing a committee. The team that focuses on this, that we meet maybe at some time, but focus on this and that, so that we are able to cover a lot of ground. Then this thing of stereotyping that you must have everybody in one meeting, a committee, for you to be able to work. Well, we can be able to share information after that and so on, but we're able to dedicate time to be able to. I mean, something that I think we must think about. But if you look at the ground that we've covered, I mean, because even in the security cluster, we're scratching the surface. You know, scratching the surface, we're not really doing what. We've not even called the NPA, Leonard McCarthy, to come and account. And I'm saying those things that really we have to ensure that we deal with. But we've heard what is happening. We have seen what is happening. The PSC has presented to us. What is quite strange is that the department is not just developing policies. The public safety administration is not even only two categories. The 100% compliance for many years and the 100% compliance in the past year. They are not even there. In those two categories. Quite interesting. Quite interesting. Colleagues, let me hear you. I mean, I was just something. Or any state South Africa, the 92% state South Africa. The other one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I think you are correct to say we are not well established when it comes to the public service and administration. I just want to know if the commission can share with us. I was thinking, firstly, that sometimes I'm talking about possibility, sometimes you don't feel this FDF because you don't participate. We don't have shares, we don't have, is it not, I mean, I'm talking about the percentage you say, the compliance, and they are not complying. The other possibility is that, number two, is that there is debt tendency in the public service, where you find that you have meetings, you talk, you take decisions, but it's not implemented. It's just a labor affair. It's there. I mean, I don't know how are we going. It's a mammon task, because you talk, agree, but people just go home and come back the other day and nothing has happened. And I think that is chronic. Lastly, Chair, if they can share with us. There was a very scary thing in education, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, where we found that the department was not sure how many teachers it has employed. They say they don't know how many people it has employed. And it's just like that. And they said they are good teachers, but they don't know how many people they have employed. So if we can't overcome that, then it means then we are a joke.
Thank you, Mpemba. I think you've had the issues put. And I don't think even the Eastern Cape, they know how many teachers. They're still struggling. I don't know which they know. Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with you fully, Chairperson. We must call people to account, and this has been brought to our attention now, and we will be forsaking our duty if we do not act on the information we got here this afternoon. What is worrying to me is the fact that there is no penalties for people that don't comply. On the last page of the recommendations, it says penalties and fines to be imposed. So is that not something that we must sort of look at immediately if we can't put some authority on this issue and force people to comply? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Probably been looking at the possibility of developing a legislation on this matter. But the legislation is more, when you talk about a law, you know, you only evaluate a law, it's something serious. Than violating a police, you know, and something I must look at.
Chairperson, unfortunately, I can't see. My spectacles are not with me here. I can't read. It's dark. It's worse. In Mpumalanga, we've got a problem with this administration. There are schools. I don't know whether it's ghost schools. They are principal in that school, teachers who are not existing anyway. I think that Honorable Leru saying, we must call these people to come in account. Because if we don't call them, this thing is going to go on like that.
No, we're very sorry, Manyanda, that's here.
You see how important the eyes are.
Now, what is for you to see, you must use the hands and touch.
No, you're right.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, I'm laughing because my conference has done very well. And I think what I can, other provinces must learn from about the loyalty of my high commission.
Yes.
About the loyalty of my high commission. I'm worried about what Honorable Leroux is saying, Chairperson, on the penalty. Of course, we know that the Public Service Commission will require just to do this work and compile the information, make recommendations, but in terms of implementation, that must be done by the department or parliament itself. I'm a bit worried about that, and I think that worry needs to be addressed to chapter 7, and you say you probably need to develop a legislation that empowers you. I think I would agree to that. The second thing, chapter 7, is on the actions. What could be the reasons for some of the standards? You know, a person was supposed to declare their income. What have you found to be the other reasons for them to declare their income? And internally within the department, because you have, what is the executing authority, chapter 7? Is it there?
It's a political head.
If I'm overseeing that I need to ensure that this person does the following, it's not doing that, what actions do they take? Because they cannot just rely on others. They must actually do something about it. Have you got any... Do you have any situation where you have seen the executing authorities taking action against people who are failing to declare their own interest? You know, that's where the bug stops, as you normally say. That's where the bug stops. If you employ people, they don't respond to what they are expected to do. The bug must stop that. Have you come across something of a situation where actually these people are doing what is expected from them? I think, Chairperson, that is what I wanted to say in this meeting. For now, I will come back later. Okay?
Thank you very much, sir. You know, on this thing of these disclosures, I think one of the main recommendations you're making is that they must part of their performance as an argument. An HOD must be able to be judged as to whether the people below and so on, below that HOD are this thing you do, even those that are below, you know, the third layer and so on and so on, they're able to judge that. But it becomes something serious that they're taken. But at the same time, I think there must be some punitive actions, as you are raising the issue of imposing some penalties and so on. But I think not only penalties, we must look at the possibility of it also being something that you can be disciplined for if you have not implemented something like that. That you look at that in the way. Because what you are saying, I mean, this thing of the... Well, the most important thing here is that, you know, the system of South Africa, which I think might be correct, is that officials are immune from corruption. That is why they sit on the procurement. Politicians, they are susceptible. That's why they are removed. I mean, that's what the logic is about. To say, no, you can handle procurement, you can deal with this... supply chain management. You can deal with it as official. Politicians are taken away from it. I mean, started when we came into power, 1994, that it was officials and people outside sitting on the tender boards. We dissolved the tender boards. That responsibility, politicians were never there in provincial and national. And then we dissolved the tender boards. We said no, but this must remain with the officials. And we took it to local government now. Say, councillors, those who are involved in this thing, get away from it. Yeah, they complained, they kicked and screamed and so on. We said no, it has to be done. It means then you must create a mechanism that minimizes the potential for these people to get to be template for temptation. Because now, there's nothing that is much of this. Even this one, besides the submission that you've made, in terms of proposal, what other things that you think they should be done to make this thing stringent?
in a way that makes sure that these things are done. That's one thing. The second thing is the order general. Is the auditor general having more capacity to go deeper in checking these potential conflict of interest? Or they identify the problem in the first way to check it? If that is the case, I think we need an argument that says the Public Service Commission, maybe you must strengthen your forensic side. If you have the forensic side, so you can delve deeper in checking this thing, this is your fight against. You know, you must buy it, not a thing. Maybe something that you must look at, because I'm telling you, you have officials that are driving big houses, everything deep. And when you look at the salary of the person, it doesn't justify it.
It doesn't justify. Because I'm telling you, this thing is like crime. If we strengthen it at a level of the senior management service, they are going to go down to the foot soldier and keep saying, oh, this thing, register yourself. Well, if you kill crime, then it moves to another someone. They say, no, run this thing in there. And then you run on up the house and you're able to give us a proceed. But I think we must be able to check him in the lifestyle. I mean, of individual. Say no. This person. This person. Yes, it's like well. Well, I know our people. You can't hide well forever. It has a tendency of showing itself in one way or the other. That no, I have it, even if I can find hide it. So you do things. To me, I think really if you want to do it, I'll tell you why, you know. You know, I was watching government departments, the way they give work to each other. Officials. They know this is a big meeting there, catering is given to this one, and you come with a company and so on. Right? And then there's that event there, the event management company, you give to that one. And they block people outside, don't get in. Even in the council, local government, like that. It is known that no. And so the public knows about this thing. They know that these things are given to friends and to colleagues. That's the reality. That's the reality. To me, I think where we can hit people where it hurts most is when we deal with the lifestyle. Because you don't hide the way, when you have money, oh, you're not going to hide it. Then you must tell, your expense that you have, the tax that you pay and everything, that will justify the lifestyle. And if people can mobilize sufficiently to know that they report is matter of the suspicion that they think that they are living beyond their means. People are going to go and report. Well, they are unhappy. They are greedy. Well, corruption deprives them what is supposed to come to them. They are greedy. They are going to rise people and say, no. They are mad and say, the way he does, the way he conducts himself, he's having these so many cars and so on, and him check. Then, they must be checked. To me, I'm saying, I think it's something that I'm saying, what other things that have you looked at? Because you are running this corruption structure and so anti-corruption structure and all that and all that. But I don't think it is sunk. It is not sunk to us. Mama.
I want to ask you what you are saying. For instance, government, they've got database of this catering people. This catering is their people who are catering in the government.
Now those things are there, I think we must really keep. We must look at them fighting. We now support a situation where we strengthen ourselves. Well, in other quarters we're discussing about you. Whether you dissolve you or not. We're discussing that. Baba.
think, listen. No, Chair, you know, this engagement is long overdue. I fully agree with you. I would have engaged this thing long time ago. some of us were, because when we grew up, we had boys looking after cattle of our fathers. And it was easy, no? To take this head of cattle and put it in a dipping tank. It's easy, you know. But a human being, I'm telling you. Now, I don't know if the PSC, Doc, I think we must develop another mechanism of vetting everybody in the employer vesting.
Yeah.
Let everybody be vetted from now on. I don't know what you think about it, that let's have this system where everybody is vetted in the system. You know? If it comes to a push, vetting that goes with the polygraphy test and all those things, to claim this, because really you might trick two questions, but not all the questions can be tricked. What about that one? Now, secondly, I agree, culprits are the very same senior management in government. Now, in the other layers, of course, you will find it, but as my colleagues are saying, you know, in some instances, they are saying, for example, if there's a tender, or if there's a post in a department, it advertising it and tendering process is just a formality. They know way before documents are given out for people to fill out, and they know who's going to get it. And it is a chain, Doc. It is a chain. The name would be a certain Mahona Mukwena, somewhere there, who is not known here. But if you can follow this chain from the person who got that tender, you track this chain. Don't give up. Just break the chain and move with it. Let me tell you, where you're going to end up. You're going to end up in a very senior person in an office who was presiding over that very tender. But the step that was taken before, you know. Now, compliance. Now, let me go to the question about these forms. Don't you think the forms need some adjustment and improvement? It's a pity, I don't even have the format, I don't even know how it looks like, but how people are cheating on this form, I think it needs some reviewing, the form that is used. Now, the big question is, the chief that my colleague was talking about, the PSC to bite, if some people, because it is clear, even in this admission here, that some departments, they submit, they are not in the deadlines on when to submit these forms. They submit at their own time. Some of them don't even comply. They don't submit. What can we do? What can we do? For people to know that if I don't submit on the day given, my head is going to roll. If you think Parliament has to intervene and give you some more teeth to bite, more than the 32 we are having, I think some of us are willing to can assist you. Because if 32 teeth is not enough to bite, who can add? Who can add? Who can add? What's your proposal on that one? What can you do? We're willing to assist you here. In the best interest of our people, because what kind of people are going to cheat the state or, you know, just deliberately ignore some of the instructions from their very same thing. There's this thing called the cooling off period. Cooling off period. What's your view on that one? Because
some of them won't declare their directorship in this thing. But immediately they resign from your employ, they won't even spend even a week. They'll be employed as directors of some company. Point at that company. It was their own company, but they don't want to associate themselves with it. Why are people so fortunate that immediately they resign and the work is waiting for them somewhere? Huh? They couldn't off period. That's where I am. Now, what do you think about that one? Because we talked about the cooling off period, but so some people even now, I know of some senior officials who resigned 2 or 3 days after that, and then they are a director in one company. Go and look at people who are heading ESCOMs, go to Vodacom, go to Transnet, go to some other companies, I can't name them here. You know? What do you think of that one? Because to me, Chairperson, it's so unfair. Members of Parliament are also asked to declare who are doing that. And if you don't do that, you are punished again. Why is this not even to officials? So officials say, you know, it's legacy, you know. It's casually done. Maybe it's to my other third question about you suggesting some mechanism that we can use as Parliament to assist you to deal with it. Because, you know, if a member of Parliament can't disclose the conflict of interest, I mean, there's a committee chaired by Museki. That committee is so unpopular in Parliament, but they're very effective. They deal with you, the ethics committee, you know, it's a dog. They deal with you decisively, and if you don't do that, I mean, you feel pity that I would declare, you know. So for declaring, there's nothing wrong in declaring. They don't say if you declare, it means then you are going to do some benefits. No, it's just for you just not participating when some decisions are taken in a particular department or whatever. Now, MPs are so unfortunate. Yeah, which person will write and send across us? That's one other thing. I don't know, Doc, how can you we identify these people who are not complying? You find that they are sleeping partners. They are sleeping partners, channeling fame to their own company while they are sleeping partners somewhere. I don't know. Chair, I agree with you. Maybe we need, we want to support you that let's develop a program where we're going to invite the department to come and appear before your committee. We're being assisted by the PSC. Dog and his team will come and sit with us. On that day, you'll be part of us, Dog. You won't be that side and what? You'll be with us and with our team. When the parties are sitting that other side, where they will be trying to lie to the committee, because we're dealing with them, you'll be able to say, no, yeah, I think the department is not telling the truth. Because of the information here that your department, for the past 3 years, you're not complying, you know. So that we are effective in dealing with the department. I want to concretely second that proposal, Chair, that you just put forward, and that let's do it. It's long overdue. For now, let me rest my case. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mbrana. Well, I think the first one to start with is Department of Health. Because they say they complied once and they stopped. They don't take it serious. And they start with the Health Department, they must come and talk to us. And we engage them. I think that one we must deal with because it is in the interest of our people. With your third question, Doc, I'm going to just give some general comments, and then the DG is obviously also going to deal with some of the very specific. I want to put on record our appreciation for the commitment that we're hearing from this select committee with regard to the assistance you're prepared to give in terms of fighting corruption. Because I don't think that the Public Service Commission responsibility is not your responsibility. I think we all owe it. Especially when it comes to the whole question of services not being delivered
And in fact, people are enriching themselves through whatever processes you people might have identified. So we've noted the kind of commitment that this committee has indicated, and in fact, almost the impatience around aspects of corruption. And we would certainly avail the Public Service Commission if this committee is prepared to call departments to account, and we will avail ourselves to in fact assist this particular committee in terms of you performing that function. But it's about time that it happens. To give you an idea is that we are talking about the public service has, you know, does about 100 billion rands worth of business a year. You know, in terms of procurement. That's roughly, that's just a ballpark thing of about 100 billion rands worth of business a year. Now if I'm working for a, you know, you could become very, very rich if you just position yourself very, very nicely. So the opportunities are there. There's no doubt about it. The opportunities are there just in terms of procurement processes. So in terms of the danger, particularly people who are involved with tenders and procurement, I think we had previously asked that, in fact, those officials must also be considered for declaring conflict of interest or filling in. If you are affected in terms of being part of the supply chain management decision-making processes, I think it must go beyond just the senior management services. The second area that we still feel that if we, you know, not if we look at this aspect, this is just a filling out of a form. What goes into the form is something else that we also need to look at, you know, to what extent people actually are clearing. You're talking about silence and what's name partners and sleeping directors and things like that. So the fact that people are not even putting the form in there. The next part that we need to look at, what goes into the form, how well those forms get filled up, whether the necessary information gets put into the form. Currently we only have on the form the name of the department and the level that you probably occupy, like a director, a chief director, deputy director, but it doesn't tell you what kind of work you're actually doing. That's one of the difficulties that we have with the forms to say, this person is working as a chief director in a particular area that makes him particularly vulnerable to potential conflicts of interest because of areas of corruption. So those are some of the areas. But just the fact that the forms are not even filled out is for us problematic. So, you know, we must therefore celebrate Northwest. I think we need to celebrate Northwest, but we need to go a little bit more deeper. Now we've got 100% of the forms. The opportunity, therefore, to actually manage it better in the Northwest is so much better because we've got the forms there. But when we don't have the forms, we are in the dark as everybody else in terms of we don't even know about sleeping or what's really going on within the public service. So it's really a minefield out there. But this year, the Public Service Commission, in fact, has committed itself to take this matter much deeper. But a lot of what we want to do is, in fact, try and ensure 100% compliance in order to take the matter to a high level. But certainly, we would avail ourselves as a Public Service Commission to, together with the Portfolio Committee and Parliament as a whole, in terms of addressing the matter in this particular area. Adet, I think we can do the rest.
Thank you, Chair. Now, definitely, I mean, as a Public Service Commission, we see ourselves as having technical oversight. The political oversight and the real clout is in this committee. And what we're saying is we generate evidence for committees like yourself.
Yeah.
We've got factual evidence to show you who is not complying, and therefore we can work out a modality where we can support you in accountability hearings. But really, the buck stops here. The buck stops with the committee of this. And for the Public Service Commission, we're still waiting for the day when committees like yourself act like a scoper, where we then can act like the Auditor General as support for you as a committee. And we're saying we've got the evidence, we've got the information, and we can do this here, depending on your readiness to look into this area. I'm also very glad that you say this is an area that definitely needs much more attention. If you look at what's happening at local government and municipalities, this kind of systems are not as structured as it is, even at the public service and at the provincial and the national public level. And if you look at the single public service bill and act that we may be moving into, it also says that the kind of oversight you're going to have and the kind of jurisdiction, that must be strengthened. And it will also beg the questions about how does a public service commission, an organization like ourselves, position ourselves in terms of evolving public administration mandate. And these are some things that we really need to talk through in terms of not only looking for resources for an institution in terms of this area, but really looking at the whole gambit of what public administration is all about. In terms of the question was raised about the issue of the number of employees in the public service. You know, this is also an example to what extent a committee can use an institution like the Public Service Commission. Very recently, I think in November last year, SCOPA called the Public Service Commission and says, we want you to go and do a study for us and tell us within 3 months what is the vacancy rate within the public service. Within 3 months, we were able to go to SCOPA, but sadly, we had to tell SCOPA, we can't with certainty tell you what the vacancy rate is, because there's a 74% discrepancy rate between what the payroll system is saying and between what departments themselves are saying. And until you get departments that are responsible for personnel, ensuring the kind of accuracy you get there, you're going to continue to get information that doesn't make sense, does not support decision-making, does not support service delivery and accelerated service delivery. But we've got to start asking ourselves some of these much harder questions that go beyond compliance, but actually look at some of the systemic problems that this public service is facing and why it will continuously have difficulty in meeting service delivery challenges. We talked about fines and penalties, but we mustn't forget that this is a regulatory requirement. I'm obligated as a senior manager to ensure that I fill in my financial disclosure form on an annual basis. If I fail to do that, my EA, my minister, my MEC is duty bound to charge me in terms of misconduct. The policies are there. We've got excellent policies. The framework is there. The disciplinary handbook is there. But do we have the political will? Do we have the senior administrative will? Are DGs ensuring that people that report to them are being held accountable and are being charged if this is not happening? Or ministers are ensuring that DGs are being held accountable or being charged for this? So what I want to say to this committee, the framework is there. It's an inability to utilize that framework in the way in which it was intended. And that is a sad indictment on your senior leadership in the public service and sadly also on your political leadership in the forms of your ministers and in the forms of your MECs. And somewhere along the line, when you talk about accountability, it's not necessarily only summoning your director general and the managers there, but you also have to think about summoning also the executing authorities. Because coming to that, you would want to say, what actions can the EA take? The executing authority can charge, as I say, a senior management with misconduct. And on numerous occasions, we've gone on record, and we can even share with this committee these letters, where we've sent letters to ministers, to MECs, and said, your department is not complying. So and so in your department is not complying. You are able to charge this person in terms of this. What have you done in relation to that? And more times than not, unfortunately, there's total silence. And that's why it needs the kind of power of this committee to give us the chief that you're talking about, but to really ensure the kind of compliance you're looking for. And the chief, you asked the question, what other things...
That has taken action based on the failure to comply. Do you have any understand the responsibility, but you were saying this as an example. Anybody who was very decided to deal with people who are ready to comply, is there any case?
That's the reality, Chair. As I said, I can give you all the letters we sent to ministers, but nobody has acted.
Nobody.
That's the reality.
We don't have a single example of anybody being charged with discipline for not having what's next, really.
Countless letters to actually show you who they were sent to, on which dates we were sent. In some cases, ministers have got these letters on an annual basis, not a one-off letter. We're talking about a number of letters. But here, going to the question about what other things should we do in ensuring that this actually becomes much more entrenched, more as a way of doing things rather than a way of not doing things. And I've spoken about the political will. Until you get the kind of buy-in that you want from the EAs and the buy-in from senior management, it's always going to be a challenge. But the rigorous oversight, I think many have said enough about that. What we should go with leaving this meeting should really be about a modality to ensure that that kind of oversight on this issue is actually mapped out and spelled out. The naming and shaming. We haven't gone to, you know, the Public Service Commission, we've deliberately said we will assist this public service rather than go out there and name and shame this public service. But the reality is we're sitting with names of high-ranking officials, which if that becomes public, can itself perhaps be the deterrent that we're looking for. But we haven't gone that step yet. It would be interesting if there is a move in that direction. But you're so right in terms of lifestyle audits. Lifestyle audits are really a way to get to pulling that chain that the honourable member spoke about. And if you go to countries like the Philippines and all, lifestyle audits are a way of life. Uh-huh. They do it with their senior management. But the reality is you're looking at a public service commission who is really sitting with just over 200 employees and must cover a public service of 1.2 million. So even if you want to compare our capacity with the Auditor General, that in itself will be unfair. The Auditor General's office just in the Western Cape is bigger than my whole national office. And this is the kind of resources that we need to compete with in order to, in a sense, do this kind of work. And we do have the skills, we know in which direction to go, but we don't have the sufficient warm bodies to do it. As we talk for the 2008-2009 year, our allocation, our increased allocation from Treasury is 0%. So this is the constraints that we have as an organization. And once again, you start talking about the single public service, you start talking about the role of the Public Service Commission, and you can already see we hamstrung before we've even begun. And these are some of the challenges that we really need to talk about in terms of supporting certain initiatives. The other issue that the Honourable Member spoke about is the issue around vetting. In a sense, some kind of vetting does take place. I think the question is just how adequate this vetting is. Because as you know, if you're appointed into the public service, before you can get an appointment letter, it's incumbent on every department to check your criminal records. But to what extent this is actually happening is itself a problem area. The other aspect where vetting does happen is where the National Intelligence Agency vets for classification of state documentation and state information. But that's just certain levels that are actually vetted. It's not your entire public service. So while there's elements of it, I'm not sure it's holistic enough to ensure that the profile of the public servant you want in your public service is that one of an honest public service. There's not none of those guarantees, you know. And maybe we need to look at that in a much more clearer, in a much more closer way. The other, you spoke about the forms, and you've heard us talk about the inadequacy of the forms. You've heard us critique the very forms in which people have to sign. And Chair, we've done the responsible thing. We sent a comprehensive cabinet memo to cabinet to indicate that these are the loopholes you need to tighten in terms of this form. Unfortunately, we're not the policy maker. We can influence policy, we can persuade, we can cajole, but at the end of the day, we can't actually say, this will be the new policy. That is left to another department. And at this stage, as a public service commission, we're still waiting for a response in terms of how this matter is going to be taken forward. And this is no different to the cooling off period you talk about. Public Service Commission has been vocal around the cooling off period. We recognize and we accept the complexities involved, and we accept that trade, the strength of trade and all that is in itself difficult. But we call for a policy on conflicts of interest. And we started from the premise, Chair, that we're not there to say that you're sitting with corrupt officials. We started from the premise that you're actually wanting to try and create a framework which helps keep your honest employees honest. And you can then still deal with the others that are your rotten eggs as such. Likewise, we are still waiting to hear whether the policymaker believes that this should be turned into policy or not. But we've gone on record in relation to how vocal we are about not only the policy of conflict, but there needs to be some kind of clauses around the cooling off period. We've also looked at, what was it? Yes, Chair, I think I'm going to stop there. I think those were more or less some of the issues.
Just to add, I think the one area that was referred to quite frequently in the questions and remarks made was the area around supply chain management. And it is also an area that the Public Service Commission has recognized as a problem area. And frequently when corruption or the area of supply chain management is made public, it is the big amounts, the big contracts. But through our investigations that we've conducted, through complaints received, and etc., we've noticed that supply chain management practices within the threshold of under 30,000 rand is actually a problem area. So as the Public Service Commission, we are in the process of conducting an investigation. Remember, in that threshold, you don't have to go out on tender. You can get quotes. In terms of our previous investigations, we've already seen that there's issues such as cover quoting and other problem areas as far as this is concerned. So this is an investigation that we're currently completing, and I think the information that we obtained from that would assist not only in terms of providing recommendations in terms of supply chain management, but it could also reflect on conflicts of interest.
Been able to answer the question, but I just want to leave you with a final thought from us. We've made the presentation on financial disclosures, you know, the fourth, as I've indicated, but it's bigger than that. I think the DG has given us the indication how much bigger it is, in fact. It's just one aspect of it. So when we do tackle this matter, it must be tackled in its entirety, both in terms of what the Auditor General has found, the compliance here, what's in the forms, and a whole range of other issues in terms of the integrity framework that the Public Service Commission has been trying to develop for the public service, to keep the public service honest, so that we can deliver. And part of it, in fact, is in fact our own accountability mechanisms and holding the EA, the executive, and the head of department. And you'll see from the next part of the presentation some of the gaps there, because the point is, you imagine if somebody's performance agreement and his performance agreement don't even get evaluated. You know what I'm saying? So that really gets a knee-jerk reaction again. So I think what you look at just narrowly in terms of financial disclosure forms, it's a much bigger issue, and we need to look at and tackle it from that particular perspective.
Thank you very much, Dr. Maharaj. Well, maybe the lady there, do you want to add anything, madam? Okay, you are still shocked with these MPs here. We'll get used to them, don't worry. With time, with this thing goes with time. Well, we thank you very much for the honest responses, because for us to have an honest public service, we must be honest ourselves. I think the way you end this thing is very honest, in an honest way.
Now, what you should agree upon on this point is that myself, the prof, the Odette, and maybe Ntuli and our staff, we meet in preparation for these hearings, where we must look at the capacity required, the information that must be done, maybe two metrics that give us a history of all departments and health soldiers and their representatives. But at the same time, ensure that that history, you are able to give us even the copies of letters that have been sent to the executive. Now, the executive is gone now. It's executive authorities on the bill that we passed last year. Executive authorities. That we will deal with that and then call the people concerned. Of course, that was the Department of Health. That's the first one. Huh? That one is the first one in the program. Start with it and so on. And of course, then when we do that, we look at the priorities, those that are in that situation, so that we can make it right. But I think at the end, two things that to me must as an outcome, must be shown out of it. One is an issue of commitment to compliance. That is important. Two, I think it's an amendment of these compliance things, including things that we thought that must be taken up. Because when you fail or you don't succeed, let's put it positively. We don't talk about failure, that you fail. When you don't succeed at a level of the executive, we're here. We'll take on the executive. And I must tell you that as we speak, the situation is quite, it's very nice to live in South Africa. Parliament is getting more stronger. As I talk to you, we're discussing a money bill. A money bill is Chinese constitution. Money bill says Parliament must amend the budget. Even if people don't agree with the minister in allocating public service commission an amount, we believe that in strengthening the instruments of accountability and democracy, more money must go to the Public Service Commission. Come here in Parliament, to amend it, say no, more money. They recruit more people. That's those are exciting times that we've never had. They are pregnant with possibilities for the future. That's where we're going. Now, I'm saying in that way, Parliament is going to be much stronger. It is building its capacity in terms of what it has to do. Now, in my view, is that the Public Service Real Commission must be strengthened. Of course, we are still debating, as I said, your whether should you agree or not. that's the thing. But that's my view, that you must be strengthened, that you must have more capacity, so that you ensure that we have a clean public service. But in executing your tasks, you must work with intelligence agencies, you must work with SARS, we must work with all institutions that are relevant in ensuring that we catch the crook, if there's any crook. So that must be our motto. Catch the crook, if there's any crook. So then we have a clean cut. And I think overall, let's close in that note. That remember, when we were not here, I was saying that a summer, me and you, and this gentleman here, and the head of the public service, Professor Sangweni, and Odette, the PG, were to meet to prepare on engagement for hearings. Then I've said what are issues that I think must be there and so on, so that then we can prepare for those hearings. It is going to be a big thing, but I like big things, because they must be heard, they must be tackled head on. Anyway. But this is going to be more exciting thing and so on. And but I think to me it will justify why you need more capacity as you do the work. It will still be even to everybody in the public. And we must mobilize a lot of media coverage for that, for those events. So to see that Parliament election, it will be for the first time when we do it exactly. Thank you very much. I think let's get to the second presentation. It's quite nice.
But my intention is that really, I think, by half past four must be done. Then let's allow you, Dr. Maharaj, to take us through on the second presentation.
Yeah, I think related to one of the second areas that we've also elevated, the DG has spoken about us having brought matters to the attention of the executive, the cabinet. This particular matter is another matter that this Public Service Commission has taken to the highest level of the executive, to cabinet, in terms of matters of compliance. So it's just fortuitous that they've asked us to give a presentation of two very critical issues that happen to be critical issues for the Public Service Commission as well. So I'm going to ask Panangile to make a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm going to present a quick update on the evaluation of performance of heads of department. The promise of the presentation is that we're going to look at the background, the evaluation of the performance of HODs in terms of progress made, challenges, analysis of reasons for non-compliance, and the recommendations. HODs, or heads of departments, are administrative leaders and drivers of key government programs which actually need to ensure service delivery objectives of the department. And they are also supposed to be delivering services to the key stakeholders. So HODs are supposed to be held accountable for the achievement of those objectives within their scope and their responsibility. And the performance management system provides such a mechanism for promoting accountability. Performance management helps to clarify the responsibilities, priorities, and performance expectations between the executive authorities and their heads of department. When this is done properly, performance management helps to create a sound basis for administrative decisions. The PSC has, since the year 2000, been involved with the facilitation of evaluations of heads of department. And also in the year 2000, the PSC developed a framework for the evaluation of heads of department. In this process, the PSC has observed with concern the decline in the numbers of the HODs being evaluated on an annual basis, and this will be shown in the later slide when we look at the actual numbers in the tables. So this presentation provides an analysis of the progress and challenges observed in the performance of HODs and provides some recommendations. The framework, as I have mentioned, was adopted by Cabinet in November 2000. And in terms of the framework, the responsibility to evaluate resides with the EA, the Executive Authority. And I think we're encouraged when we hear the Chair promising that if there's non-compliance, then this House will take a strong action. The success, the pillar and the success of the implementation of the framework for evaluating HODs lies with the EAs. It's their key responsibility to evaluate, and we are seeing in some instances that the evaluations are actually not taking place, and the process therefore cannot move forward. So the EAs need to actually appoint the panel members serving on the evaluation session. Then those panels generate advice. The EAs also must provide the relevant documents used for the evaluation, like the annual reports, the performance agreements, and the verification statements signed by both the HOD and the EA. The PSC overall in this area plays the role of facilitator, and that I think we need to just keep in mind that the PSC can do whatever it can do after the EA has initiated the process. So the PSC is a facilitator in the evaluation process. We, as the PSC, have issued guidelines that complement the framework and that is published annually. The PSC also chairs the evaluation meetings, manages the process, and provides secretarial support. The first evaluation cycle in which the framework was implemented was in 2001. Ever since, the evaluation framework has been applied every year. And in 2001, there was good progress made in the first evaluation cycle, where 80% of the HODs who qualified to be evaluated were actually evaluated. However, after this, there has been a steady decline, which has also been raised in different reports to different key role players in the process to say there is a problem here. There is a steady decline in the number of HODs evaluated. And for example, only 66% of the qualifying HODs were evaluated during 2003-04 evaluation cycle. And for the 2004-05 and 2005-06 performance cycles, only 61% and only 57% of the qualifying HODs were evaluated respectively. This slide provides a big picture in terms of the numbers and the percentages, looking at the national and provincial departments according to the different tiers. We're starting from 2003-04, 2004-05, 2005-06, and we've also included 2006-07. So if we look at the far right column, we can see in terms of evaluation percentages, 2003-04, overall there was a 66%, or 66% of all those qualifying HODs were evaluated. Then the following year, 61, the following year, 57. However, for 2006-07, we should note there that the 15%, the process is still in progress because the evaluations for the previous year only take place in the following year from September after the publication of the annual performance report. So for the 2006-07, the evaluation process will only be finalized in July 2008. So the PFC is concerned about the increase in the number of qualifying HODs who are not evaluated. And a qualifying HOD is an HOD who has been serving in that position and has completed a full financial year. So if you refer back to the previous slide, we have also mentioned vacancies and where they are acting HODs, and they are not included in the numbers that we're talking about. There's also a disturbing trend of departments whose HODs have never been evaluated since 2001. And health, unfortunately, also is number one in my slide here. Health, then there's also Home Affairs, Public Works, Justice and Constitutional Development and Arts and Culture. However, the offices of the Ministers of Health and Justice have only recently approached the PFC to request that their HODs be evaluated for 2005-06 and 2006-07 financial years. Some of the key challenges encountered is that the filing of performance agreements is not done. And I think it should be noted that performance agreements are a basis for performance contracts for HODs. Therefore, if they are not in place, there is no basis for the EA to hold their HOD accountable for their performance. Cabinet in 2002 approved that the PFC should actually, or the HODs have to file their performance agreement with the PFC. The PFC has experienced challenges in this regard as well, in that some HODs submit their PAs long after the due date, which is June of each financial year, but these are supposed to be concluded in April, that is at the beginning of the financial year, whereas others do not submit their PAs at all. So that means if they do not submit at all, there is no basis for an evaluation and there's no basis for a contract to hold, for the EA to hold the HOD accountable, whether they perform or do not perform. So, if looking at the numbers, only 101 PAs were filed for 2005-06 instead of 130 that were expected. And in looking at these numbers, all performance agreements of HODs have to be filed, even if a person has been employed during the financial year. They are given 3 months to get to know what their work is about, and then they have to file within after those 3 months. So there is no reason for them to say, I am new, and therefore I didn't file. In the following year, only 100 PAs were received out of the 125 expected for 2006-07, and only 92 out of 129 PAs were received by the PSC for the 2007-08 financial year. And these figures are as of 29 February 2008. And it is important to stress that PAs are a performance contract, and it is important that they are concluded timely because they are the basis for accountability. Some of the submission of the PAs, the information is shown here, the number received, the number outstanding, and the number of HODs in acting positions. The acting HODs are not supposed to file the PAs with us. Only those who are permanently employed need to do so. But if you look at the numbers again, those who are in acting positions are very few, and the numbers outstanding is what is not acceptable. And the implications, as mentioned earlier, is that there is no basis, therefore, for performance. And the numbers in terms of percentages, 63% for 2004-05, 78% for 2005-06, 80% and 71%. And I think this is the area where we need to have a higher percentage of compliance. Some of the key challenges encountered as well is that key in order to ensure that the HOD evaluation process happens is that the EAs need to initiate the process. And the key challenge that we experience with the process is that EAs do not initiate or set aside time to conduct the assessment. And therefore, the commitment of EAs is crucial, as the process cannot be initiated without their participation. Other issues arising are that the quality of documents that are presented to the PSC, in some instances, the evaluation documents are not presented timely from the minister's offices, and that sometimes causes delays. Then the meeting sometimes are cancelled because documents have not been received or the information in the documents is not correct. So this tends to be a big problem, even though it's just a process issue. The PSC has also raised a concern that the content of documents submitted for the evaluation process does not always meet the requirements in terms of the framework and the prescript, or is not of the desired quality. That speaks to the maybe capacity of a HOD or minister's offices in terms of whether they can actually process the documents before and check the quality before it comes through to the PSC. The PAs submitted do not always meet all the requirements contained in the PMDS, and challenges have been experienced with the verification statements submitted. For example, sometimes these are submitted without the signatures, and the signatures of the HOD and EA demonstrate that the two parties know what is in there, because it's about the achievement and the rating, and therefore if there are no signatures, then it's a problem, it's not a valid document. Verification statements sometimes are not aligned to the work plans or the performance agreements. And what, I mean, it's difficult then if the HOD says in their performance agreement that's what they're going to do, but when they're presenting evidence of the work that has been done, it doesn't talk to the planning documents. So that poses a problem as to what, therefore, is the HOD going to be held accountable for, or did they do what they said they were going to do in the first place? So, and also this has been seen to be maybe a symptom of where the EA or the HOD are not communicating properly and also preparing together for the process. Feedback to HODs and the PSC. The process of HOD evaluation is also about promoting feedback of performance by the EA to the HOD with inputs from the panel. If this doesn't happen, that means then the HOD does not benefit from the discussion that takes place. And in some instances, the PSC has been approached by HODs wanting to find out what is the status of the outcome of the HOD evaluation process, where the EA has not given such a feedback to them. And this does compromise, in a way, the potential impact of the PMDS to promote effective dialogue between the EA and the HOD. The role of evaluation panels is also very critical, because they are sometimes the critical clients or stakeholders of the different departments. And they are very busy people, but they do provide insightful input during the evaluation meetings. So sometimes it has been noted that some of the panels do not apply themselves or critically reflect on the HOD's performance. They just accept whatever the HOD and the EA have provided in terms of their input, and thus this might compromise the process. However, in most instances, we found that the panel discussions have provided quite insightful and important information. Trends in terms of performance ratings. This has been a concern mainly because when the current evaluation process is based only on the performance of the individual HOD, it doesn't take into consideration the performance of the organization that they lead. So most of the HODs have obtained ratings of 4, which is performance that is significantly above expectation, and also above, which is outstanding performance. And yet, on closer scrutiny, when looking at the performance of their organizations, some of the organizations have not actually met most of the objectives in their strategic plans. Therefore, an important consideration is to look at the individual's performance and also look at the performance of their department and try and bring those closer. The PSC believes that one of the reasons for non-compliance, that performance evaluation is not always accorded high priority, and I have spoken to this point earlier on. There could also be poor administrative support, as was mentioned earlier, and there could also be fundamental differences between EAs and HODs that are not mediated. In some instances, the PSC, in trying to analyze this process, has not ruled out the possibility that non-compliance is as a result of HODs who are poor performers simply delaying the evaluation process. So a key area requiring attention is the extent to which the rating of HODs taking into account the overall performance of their department. Through this, the ratings can serve as a useful indicator. The key recommendations coming out of this and from other reports is that EA need to play their role as provided for in the evaluation framework to ensure that evaluations take place, that performance agreements should be entered into timely and be filed with the PSC, that there's a need also to standardize the management of the career incidents of HODs. In this regard, premiers who have not delegated this function to their MECs should put in place a mechanism to avoid delays in the evaluation process. There is a need also for a roundtable discussion which the Governance and Administration Cabinet Committee and the representative group of MECs for further discussion to the challenges being faced. I think the inner discussion has also touched on looking at other committees and processes that can be used to try and deal with the problems and disclosures, but maybe that could be applicable to this process as well. In conclusion, the PSC will continue to monitor the process of evaluating HODs and report on progress, and it is hoped that the issues are raised will be given the necessary attention in order to strengthen the evaluation of HODs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, madam. Well, you know, I thought that you were multi-skilled, that you can speak on these matters that you talked about earlier and speak on this, you know, your versatile in terms of that. Maybe next time you can cross and engage on all issues as a multi-skilled civil servant or public service member. Well, I think we've heard the presentation. I mean, this thing that we're talking about today is very important. It goes at the core of service delivery, at the core. Because if head of department are not performing, they are not evaluated, the whole organization cannot deliver. It goes at the core of building a caring society. Now, if the public service heads are not evaluated and so on, it means then you never know where the organization is going. Therefore, this matter is a fundamental matter. Fundamental. In what is to be done. Now, let me allow the members to engage on the issues at hand. Babu Sabir, Mr. Lowy will follow. Are will follow. In that way, take it in that order.
This presentation is very disturbing. I mean, I'll say it presented a gloomy situation. Very disturbing, particularly to us as politicians, because whenever you try to find out why the case is like that, you don't get an answer. If you try to find out what is the reason, because I kept on asking why the case is not fit, you don't get it. Like, what is it? Is it a shortage of money, shortage of it's not clear, but if you listen at this presentation. Now, it is very disturbing because sometimes when we are visiting provinces, you find that the MEC will say it's because of the budget, and only to find that the HOD did not tell the EA that is a surplus. Now, when you say, but in this department, there's so much billions, we were not in planning, it's a strange thing. Now, no wonder, if you look at this presentation, then you can be able to get advice. But I think it's a mammon task to try to say these people. I mean, maybe we need, I'll say, maybe a legislation, a punitive thing, so that everybody will come on board.
Thank you very much, Sombisi. Well, I mean, probably this thing of feeling or non-feeling of vacancies maybe must be part of the evaluation system, that you evaluate people on that. Because the state, the government, the executive, the administration, a lot of vacancies are there. I mean, the country is poor. Unemployment is very high. And the people are there, and but they are not employed. Yeah, men are helping also in the process, not certainly. Now, I think it's something that we probably have to look at when we go forward, that this thing must be done. But at the same time, I think this evaluation system cascading down. Maybe not with them by yourself, but you must make sure that all senior managers are evaluated.
Maybe it becomes because you give the head of department, that the head of department is just on him or her, having evaluated people below the senior management as part of the office. Mr. LaRose.
Thank you, Chairperson. As my colleague said, it's very disturbing. And you said about the evaluations that the evaluations must be done, but it's worse than that, because even where the evaluations were done, it seems they were done in such a way that it doesn't really help. So we've got to get to the core of this thing. How I wouldn't like to say, except that we must get people here and confront them. And I can tell you a story. I don't want to waste time. I know we're all tired. We started early this morning. But during Christmas in my area, I had a community had a major problem with water, it's a dry area and it was really serious. And I started phoning the department. It was just sort of a week before Christmas, and I couldn't get through. And eventually, I nearly wanted to give up, and I started counting my phone calls, and I made 34 phone calls to the department. And the only answer I got back was, I got a message on my cell which said I must phone the secretary. So eventually I got through to the secretary, and I asked the secretary, what is the position with water for the community? So she said that the head of the department said she mustn't speak to me. So after 34 phone calls and 2 weeks after Christmas, I still couldn't speak to a senior manager, you see. So I wrote a letter to the minister. I haven't received an answer yet. I hope I will get an answer. But that is unfortunately what the public is faced with. And we must, it's our duty. You bring it to our attention, these things. But if we don't act, then we're equally at fault. So the sooner the better. Thank you.
We are discussing that also, Mr. LaRose. Something that says it can be business as usual. It can be. When a member of parliament comes in, today must be better than yesterday. Because when people come to a member of parliament who is not in the executive executing, they are coming for an appeal. You know, it's like going to an appeal court. And you are coming to appeal. Then the way we design things, a member of parliament, even if after the intervention there's no difference, it can't be like that. And also you find that the executive members, as you have been rude to them, not even a letter that says, I acknowledge. You know, that's what you are talking about when you are in the office of the minister. That's when the minister gets in. The first thing you do, you write an acknowledgement before you even process it. Processing will be late. Now, if that is, and I'm saying, what we are discussing then is to say, this thing of members of parliament not being respected in this country, we are going to work with that behind. People must know, what if my friend comes in on your call? Hey, go again. It's tough. Now, that's what we're working on. Well, it's quite disturbing what we're saying. Well, people come to you, they know, you remember what parliament is used to having. But then you fall to 24 phone calls, and people say, God, they can't talk to you. If it's another country, this person will be dismissed. It's not about party things, about the people. Right, that is about the benefit and so on. Now,
to meet and to try working with us. Not just in the one day. We were there sitting, providing food, and we were trying to phone, and their phones were closed. So we sat there and we ate the food and that's
what I'm saying. Same with them. Member of the community. No, we want to deal with these matters. I mean, anybody who says you must be taken like that, because we elect you and they expect something. Eric?
That's everything. Let me move from my different angle to say that I think the commission is doing a very good job. At least that one is I'll say at least the commission is doing a very good job. Because we have this information that helps us to understand problems that are confronting us as a state. And that helps us to develop a better way of dealing with this challenge. Therefore, I think we must commend you, Commission, for doing this. It is quite clear that as you do your work, there are a lot of things that are identified as serious challenges. The worrying factor is what is this one of the executive authorities who was in the first presentation and is now in the second, not being able to act. And I think we must take the same route that we suggested earlier on this matter. That's what I will do once or more. Because it creates a very serious problem. It actually creates a paralysis. If ordinary citizens of this country who have fought so hard for this democracy to be where it is today, when they go to any department or people who are expected to deliver services to them, don't take their work themselves very seriously in the sense of being evaluated and being taken to task if they don't. It clearly shows, it begins to say that even your executive authorities, children, to a certain extent, they become paralyzed. And we can't afford to have that paralysis. So that route, children, is extremely important for us to do, actually extremely urgent. I'm just worried that we're going to the election campaign. Probably in June you will be saying to us, Chairperson, that we must rise to do election. Now we need to do that as fast as we can before election. That's one comment that I wanted to make, Chairperson. The second comment, Chairperson, is on the deploying of the time evaluation. I might have missed something when you made that point. In your view, what is the cost of this? Because you see, it's at the first attempt, this thing was sort of success. But it begins to go down. What is the real problem in your own observation? I think it will be really good to know that what the problem is. The Department of Health, Jefferson, Justice, and Jefferson has observed the problem. Have you made any specific recommendation for this department? Well, it's quite clear that you need drastic measures to deal with this one. Department of Health, I know that Home Affairs Chairperson is now involved in what you call turnaround strategy. But I don't get a sense that the Department of Health, despite all these challenges, they are doing something to turn the situation around. Have you recommended any turnaround strategy without the recommendations that you are seeing? Thank you very much, Professor.
Thank you, sir. Well, points have been raised by the colleagues. And, of course, that will follow the same pattern. We'll put the same team that will be dealing with these two things, develop metrics, ensure that you look at what other measures that you think must be taken beyond this.
in showing that there's compliance. But I think in that meeting also we must have some basic information around the tools that you use for evaluation. I mean, I was a scholar dealing with this thing of balance scorecard and so on, the tools.
Really studying about these things. I became an expert dealing with this issue.
Yeah. Now, I'm saying then it's something that I think we have to look at and so on, and look at how to strengthen these things. We have talked about issues to be included in the evaluation so that the department really performs. And once you deal with the head of department, you know that the whole institution is up to scratch. It does what it's supposed to be done, because things have to be done that way. We can't afford to to relax from this situation, because it goes at the core of our core business as a government, as a state in this country, this thing of this evaluation. Because you check where the people are doing their work in the way they are supposed to be doing. That's what we are doing.
Moran. Yeah, just a chair on top. We are fortunate to get a department that is willing to also assist us when playing our oversight over people who behave like holy cows that can't be milked. Huh? Holy cows. Huh? Now, I want to urge Chairman Sopchita to say, on the day when we'll be inviting departments, that whole week, I suggest here that we can as well even invite the office of the AG. They are willing to participate in this kind of engagement, and they love the Auditor General. That's a proposal, Chairperson. I don't have to ask questions to the PSC because We are welcome, so I don't want to use my bullet now, because this is the target I want to shoot at. I want to save my bullets for that particular occasion. I mean, we are so fortunate here, and I think something. I don't want to have to say any question, but just try to propose that to say, how can it be if they also include the AG part of this meeting? The also the AG. And that they will be interested to come to be part of this meeting. I don't know, just a proposal.
Thank you very much, Mala. I think they'll respond to him. As you have said, we met with the AG as the chairperson of, I mean, the house chair and the myself, the chairperson of finance, their office. They were reaching out to the NCOP. What we discussed was, one, that they want to interact with the NCOP. We told them that we've never got a report from the AG about the department. That's a fact. And the second, they said they're supposed to be like that, because we get departments the report via departments when they keep annual reports. The other thing that we agreed upon was that, no, they must change the Exchequer Act, but some act that they finance, that says that they are accountable to the National Assembly. That's what meant, that they must be accountable to Parliament. Because even these institutions, the Chapter 9 institutions, they are accountable to the National Assembly. In fact, you still to find out what was the logic. Maybe, Mraina, you were part of the discussion. The logic that they are not accountable to Parliament. They are accountable to the National Assembly. The Constitution says so, in some of them, and so on. Then we have to look at that and ensure that, like Human Rights Commission, these commissions, and so on. That we have to look at that. But we agreed, as you are saying, that they want to participate. We've agreed on the process. And I think we'll respond to that in this case, participating. But at the same time, in some area, we're discussing the issue of the TSC. One of the things that we're looking at is that the TSC, if it exists, continues to exist, must get money from Parliament. You know, get money from Parliament.
Meaning that you are no longer seen as a people under the public service and administration department. No. You've become an institution of parliament that does oversight to departments, not because you are attached to a ministry. Because then that diminishes your value and your role as an oversight body. And all other bodies want to look at those things. Like the IEC. It must not be linked to the Department of Home Affairs. It must be an institution of parliament. Know that gets money from parliament in terms of what it does. Now, I'm saying those things are things that are strengthening the independence of yourself. That you can critique the Department of Public Service and administration without your favor. Because you know that you're part of us. You're part of the bigger family of parliament. Now, I'm saying then these are things that we are looking at, but as the is saying, you have done a good job. Our responsibility to ensure them that this job is taken to a final conclusion. And people account, because that's what they are there for. Doctor?
Yeah. Again, for the kind word and for the support, Chairperson. I just want to get clarity, and I think we need to be clear on the way forward, because it does look like that we are going to start saving the ammunition for that engagement. And I just wanted to get an idea. Are we going to be looking at selected departments and then put them under the spotlight in terms of compliance issues around a number of areas, such as financial disclosure, such as evaluation of heads of departments, such as any other matters, the adult question of the Auditor General qualified report. So you will call a department and hold them to account for a number of issues in terms of the investigation and the work that the Public Service Commission has done. That's one way, one approach, because then you will pick up a particular department and really nail them really hard on that. The alternative one is you will take an issue. You will take evaluation of heads of department and get as many departments to come in and just deal with the matter of evaluation of heads of department and the financial disclosure. So you can either be an issue-driven approach or a departmental-driven approach. And I suspect you're probably going to have both. The probably going to be both to pick out from the issues the bad departments and get those departments in here, but take a number of issues and bring in a number of departments in that way. So I think those are the kind of logistical issues that you need to look at, so that in fact you can maximize the value of that risk that you're going to be getting out. But one thing that we want to say is that we're going to hold you to account for that promise. You know? Because we, as a Public Service Commission, we like what we're hearing. That there's seriousness here. There's seriousness here in terms of your oversight role, and we're going to hold you to account. So when you're saying that you're going to call our DG and our chairperson, we expect a call. We expect this meeting to happen sooner rather than later. And that's really where I want to leave it. And I'm going to ask maybe just to speak to some of the very specifics here. But what I sense here is this matter doesn't end here today. In fact, there's going to be very decisive follow-up with regard to the declining uptake by the department. And you've placed it very clearly. This is the core of the matter. If we don't address the issue at the head of the public service, we will not be able to address what happens to the public service below. So really, to me, that is fundamental. But then,
not to say much, Chair. Only to say that the symptoms you saw in relation to financial disclosure are exactly here. It's the same issue of non-compliance of your heads of department, non-compliance of your ministers and MECs. The political will is missing. The senior administrative will is missing. I think those, so really I could, you know, talk about all these things, but it wouldn't help much. Safe to say that I want to comment about your question around what is happening in terms of other senior managers. Because if your director general is not being evaluated, you can well imagine that below that director general, nothing is happening as well. And then the reality is, Chair, we put out two very important reports which we would be willing to share and come and present to the committee. The first report was to look at three departments, Labor, Correctional Services, and Home Affairs. And what our study showed in those departments, not only the senior managers, we weren't only focusing on your DGs, but the DGs of those provinces were also covered in the study. But many of these, the study shows that not only did many senior managers not sign performance agreements, but they also got bonuses. That's what your report will show. We're about to release another report following this sample of three. We've now looked in all provinces, and we've taken a number of national departments. Our report is currently with the printers. We will be more than willing to share those findings with you. But really what I'm saying is we're touching this whole ambit of performance management. Because we realize we can't just focus on the head of the department. Because while the rotter that's starting at the head, it's definitely seeping right down the organization as well. Thank you very much.
Well, I think Madam, do you want to add anything? All right. I think what we should agree upon then is that we'll make a promise will be kept. Promise made, promise kept. We'll be saying that thereafter in relation to executing this task, in ensuring that we do that. But at the same time, I think in future, if we have to promote a partnership, that if you have done an investigation, before you release it public, meet with us, brief us about the findings, that it means whatever we do, it means then you must be saying, these are the programs that we are doing. We think by this time we'll conclude them, so that we can structure our program to ensure that we get a briefing and so that we work in partnership in a way. Because this leads me to something else. I think that in future, the next parliament that comes, the fourth parliament, I think we must lay a foundation that says, after you've concluded an investigation on the accountability, on the evaluation phase of department, they must be here. Immediately after that, call everybody who are supposed to account, to come and account. Particularly those that have not complied. Same applies to the issue of financial disclosures. That once you conclude the work, then the reports are out, then you come to us, we call them to come and account. It becomes systematic. It's not just done by chance. We're beginning now, we must lay that foundation so that thing is done like that. And all this, but you know that at the end of it, once the study is done, they are going to come to parents to account and so on. And when we are dealing with that accountability, we can cross.
Members still developing expertise. What questions to ask and how to do that and so on, what you are doing.
You are developing knowledge, a body of knowledge within the organization. I think that's what must be done because as I was saying that in the event you survive this turmoil of Professor Carter Asman's investigation, it means then you will be getting your money in parliament. You are no longer in the institution of department. Therefore, you'll be more friends because you are getting money from the same body. In a way, you conduct the work. Now, I think that's what will happen in a way we approach the future. We want to thank you very much for, of course, coming. Maybe let me allow Dr. Maharaj to say a parting shot before we request Baumse Gilava to conclude for us. Thank you very much, Doctor.
I think let's take this opportunity on behalf of this committee to thank the Commission for the good work that you've done. This information that you've given to us has really sharpened our understanding of the challenges that are confined in the government. So we want to say to you that keep on doing that work. And the commitment that the Chairperson has repeated, repeatedly said that we would want to have a follow-up interaction, but to deal with certain departments, we just want to reconfirm that. That will happen, and it will happen very soon, because we will be going to the elections. The campaign begins very earnestly from the first quarter of this year, and we want to go back to our people and be in a position to respond very precisely to questions that they will be raising with, and information that we will have received in addition to what you have given to us now. We want to say to you that we are better than we were when we arrived here in terms of understanding the work that we do. With those 3 words, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. It means, Doctor, you've given us good information, well understood, well communicated by your team. We thank you very much for that. Let's work together on partnership. Thank you very much. The meeting is officially adjourned, almost on the dot. Thank you.